Let's have another little bit more look at this practice of mindfulness of breathing at the entrance of the nostrils before we go back into the practice. So a few more things to comment, and again we'll use Alan Wallace's book here, Attention Revolution, to discuss a few further points about this practice, and this is on page 47. He says the following here. The Buddha described the practice of mindfulness of breathing with the following analogy. So now he's quoting one of the sutras from the Buddha, who said, just as in the last month of the hot season, when a mass of dust and dirt has swirled up, a great rain cloud out of season disperses it and quells it on the spot. So too, concentration by mindfulness of breathing, when developed and cultivated, is peaceful and sublime, an ambrosial dwelling, and it dispenses and quells on the spot unwholesome states whenever they arise. So now he's commenting on that. He says, this analogy refers to the healing effect of balanced attention. When awareness is brought to rest on a neutral object, such as the breath, immediately every distressing thought disappears, and the mind becomes peaceful, sublime, and happy. These qualities do not arise from the object of awareness, the breath, but from the nature of the mind in a state of balance. We're going to be looking at this a little bit later, these sort of inner qualities of the mind that we come in contact with. This approach to healing the mind is similar to healing the physical body. The Buddha implied in his rain cloud analogy that the mind, like the body, has an innate power to heal itself. By clearly attending to a neutral object with sustained attention, without craving or aversion, we enable the mind to begin its own healing. So, as we're going to see, particularly when we look tomorrow at the mind practice, as I already mentioned, we are really the slaves of our own mind, often tormented by our own mind. And one of the ways in which we're really tormented by our minds is that often when some unwanted thought, emotional memory, some negative thought, emotional memory comes up and we don't know how to deal with it, we suppress it, stuff it back down. And that really creates that often manifests as a lot of physical problems in the body, and we project a lot of this negativity onto others. So, in particular with the mind practice, but even here with the breath practice, as we're attending to the breath, then we're not engaging in that suppression, and then the healing qualities of the mind can really manifest. And so even simply acknowledging a lot of these things and not trying to suppress them really has a very much healing effect on the mind and the body. And we're going to talk more about this in the context of the practice tomorrow. Since coarse excitation is still the predominant problem during the third stage of attentional development, so he's now talking about the third stage, which we're going to be looking at this evening, you may find it helpful to continue counting the breaths. So, again, during the first two stages of the nine stages, as we saw yesterday evening, predominant problem is just complete distraction or heavy dullness. And so there, counting breaths, noting breaths can be helpful to stabilize the mind. Even at the third stage, as we're going to see this evening, we still have the problem of sometimes becoming distracted. And so even up to the third stage, things like counting the breath can be a helpful tool. And then he goes on now to talk about some more elaborate systems of counting. So we'll just briefly mention that. He said, some Theravada teachers following the 5th century scholar Buddhaghosa offer two methods involving quick counting. In the first of these techniques, you count 1 to 10 with each full respiration. In the second, with each full cycle of breath, you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So these are methods where you are more actively counting. You're counting more than just one per inhalation, exhalation. So you can, particularly if you're heavily distracted, do a little bit more active counting, maybe even simply counting one on the out-breath, two on the in-breath, and so forth. And then he goes on to quote Asanga, who's a great Mahayana master from the 5th century. He says, Asanga, on the other hand, suggested counting the breaths backward from 10 to 1. So this is also a possibility. After that, you may try counting two breaths as one, four as one, and so on, slowing the pace of counting to include even larger clusters of breath. However you choose to count the breaths, when your attention stabilizes to such an extent that you no longer experience lapses of attention, but remain continuously engaged with each inhalation and exhalation, you can stop counting. That temporary crutch has served its purpose. Asanga commented, though, that the various methods for counting the breaths are not for everyone. They may help some people to counteract laxity and excitation, but others may find that they can focus their attention quite effectively on the respiration without counting. Such people don't need to bother with any of the above counting techniques. So again, as we already mentioned, if you find counting helpful, use it. You can use any of those counting methods. You can count more frequently, like I said, one on the out-breath, two on the in-breath, or you can simply count one per inhalation, exhalation, or you can do less counting where you group three breaths or five breaths and count that as one, as you like. Or if you prefer noting instead of counting, you can note, mentally note, like breathing out, breathing in, or just out in. So again, if you find counting or noting helpful to stabilize the mind, then bring it in when you need it. Don't overuse it. And eventually, as we stabilize more and more, we'll eventually let go of counting altogether. So it's only really something we use in the first probably two stages of the practice, maybe by the third stage as well, but certainly after the third stage, we won't really need to use that anymore because our mind is much more stable. Again, some of you may find that counting from the very beginning is just another distraction. It's not very helpful. So then just leave it out. We don't need to use it at all if you don't find it helpful. As your mind calms, you may find that your respiration becomes subtler, and this results in fainter sensations of breathing. The further you progress in this practice, the subtler the breath becomes. At times it may become so subtle that you can't detect it at all. This challenges you to enhance your vividness of attention. In other words, you have to pay closer and closer attention to these sensations in order to stay mentally engaged with the breath. There's a kind of biofeedback process at work here. If your mind becomes distracted and you get caught up in involuntary thoughts, your breathing will become coarser, resulting in stronger sensations, which are easier to detect. But as your mind calms down, the breathing and the sensations that go with that become finer, and this once again challenges you to heighten the degree of your vividness. Mindfulness of breathing has this unique biofeedback advantage. So this is one of the unique advantages of focusing at the nostrils that other shamatha techniques don't have. This, as he's mentioned, this biofeedback loop. Now you may have noticed already that as your mind settles down, then the breathing settles down, which means the sensations here get more and more and more subtle, which challenges you to focus more and more intently, thereby improving the clarity of attention. But likewise, if our mind gets a little bit agitated and disturbed, then usually with that, the breathing becomes more coarse, which means the sensations here are easier to detect, helping to avoid becoming distracted. So this nostrils here has this unique biofeedback loop that helps us to keep focused and then also to improve the clarity of attention. Various physical sensations may occur in meditation. Sometimes you may feel that your limbs are extremely heavy or thick. Sometimes your body may feel very large, or you may feel that you are floating or levitating. Other sensations such as tingling, vibration, or heat are common. You may experience telescopic vision, viewing your body as if from a distance. Especially when you meditate many hours a day, you may experience within your body prana or vital energies shifting and releasing pockets of tension. When you engage in mindfulness of breathing, these energies begin to balance and flow naturally. This is a process that takes time, and while the energies redistribute themselves, their movement produces various sensations. Don't be worried about them or make a big deal of them. These are natural consequences of the practice. So this is another very important point in this practice. And again, some of you may have already experienced this already, that in meditation, sometimes we have all different types of sensations in the body can happen. Some of them can be very pleasant, some of them very strange, maybe some of them not so pleasant. And with all of these sensations, the general advice is don't get caught up in these sensations, because these sensations will come and go, and they're a natural part of the practice. And as he said, often the reason we have a lot of these strange sensations in the body is that as the breathing settles down, the subtle energies in our body are redistributing themselves and starting to balance. And while they're starting to balance, then a side effect of that is all sorts of physical sensations in the body. Some of the very common sensations, of course, is the body can feel very heavy. The body can feel very light, can feel very large, very small, can feel like you're floating. Sometimes even a sort of a, like an out-of-body experience feels like you're sort of outside your body can happen. Sometimes you have a lot of electrical vibrations in the body, a lot of tingling. Heat is very common sensation to have. And with all of these sensations, and in the meditation text, you get a list, very long list of all the possible things that you can experience in the body. And again, as I said, the general advice with all of these different sensations is don't get caught up in them. Because some of them can be very pleasant. You know, we can have this sort of very blissful flow of sensations sometimes in the body. And this can be very enjoyable. And of course, the danger is to get caught up in it and go, wow, that's so nice. I like that. I like that. I want that. And really just try to, and then crave those sensations. And then, of course, we get frustrated when they don't happen again. I mean, I know that from personal experience. One of the very first retreats I did was one of these Goenka Vipassana retreats. And as part of the instructions there was to scan the body for sensations. And if you start to do that very well, then one of the experiences you can have is this very blissful flow of subtle sensations throughout the body. And of course, the first time it happened, I went, wow, that's so nice. I like that. I want that. And so soon as, of course, as I started craving it, it disappeared. And then, of course, I started to try to recreate those sensations because they were so nice. So, I mean, I think this happened the first time on about day 4 of the retreat or something. And for about the next 3 or 4 days, I just tried to recreate that because I wanted it. And every day I got more and more and more frustrated and annoyed. And then by about day 7, I thought, oh, okay, I give up. I don't care anymore whether I have these sensations. As soon as I did that, they started coming back. But then again, I went, wow, that's nice. They're back again. I want them. And of course, then they disappeared. And so frustration set in again. So we can avoid a lot of this unnecessary frustration, because the goal of this practice is not to have some blissful sensations. The goal, of course, is to have a calm, clear, focused mind. So if you start to have some very nice sensations in the body, then just use that as a signpost that actually your practice is moving in a good direction, and don't get caught up in them wanting them, trying to hold on to them, trying to recreate them, because you're just going to get caught up in a lot of frustration and your practice is going to come to a grinding halt. Likewise, also symptomatic in the balancing is sometimes you can have some very strange sensations and sometimes some a little bit unpleasant sensations. Again, if we get caught up in fear or worry or anxiety, oh, I don't like those, go away, go away, go away, then that's also going to make our practice come to a grinding halt. These sorts of sensations will come and they'll go, and don't get caught up in them. Just let them go, let them go, let them go, and then come back to the practice. If you're having a particular sensation in the body every single session, then you may like to look at, well, actually, is there something strange I'm doing with my posture that's causing this? So then you can check a little bit. Sometimes a strange posture can cause a lot of sensations in a particular part of the body. So you can look at that. But apart from that, you'll find that these things will come and they'll go, and not to get caught up in them. Let them go, and keep to the essentials of the practice. The practice of shamatha results in an anomalous kind of attention. Normally, when the mind is relaxed, attention is slack. And when attention is aroused, this brings with it a state of tension, a tightening of the body and mind. So this is our normal method in daily life. Generally, when we're relaxed in daily life, our mind is quite dull. And when we're alert, our mind is quite tense. So these are the two things that we sort of oscillate. When we're relaxed, we're dull. When we're alert, we're tense. So here, of course, in this practice, we're trying to combine the two. We're trying to be relaxed and alert at the same time, not alert and tense or relaxed and dull. But in this practice, the more you arouse your attention, the more deeply the mind relaxes. There is a relatively egoless quality to shamatha. While other activities that call for a high level of concentration are effortful and often goal-oriented, shamatha entails doing almost nothing. You're passively attending to the sensations of the breath without regulating it in any way. Your ego is mostly taken out of commission as you let the body breathe of its own accord, exerting only a subtle degree of effort to balance attention when it falls into laxity or excitation. As you advance in this practice, increase the duration of each meditation session and decrease the number of sessions each day. Always go for quality over quantity. So as we already mentioned here, in meditation in general, but particularly in the shamatha practice, quality over quantity. And we're going to talk a little bit more, a little bit later in the retreat, actually, you know, how long really each one of us should meditate. But here, of course, in this retreat, we're doing these 24-minute sessions, which I think for many people at a beginning stage is more or less probably the right amount of time to meditate. But as said here, as our practice, of course, improves, we'll need to extend the amount of time we meditate. And when we do that, to extend it in small increments, maybe 3 to 5 minutes or so forth. Unbroken continuity of practice is vital. Imagine starting a fire by rubbing two sticks together. If you rub the sticks together for only a few moments, then rest, then do it for a few moments, then rest, you could continue in this way for years without even igniting a spark. Likewise, if you are intent on progressing through all the 9 stages, the time-tested way to proceed is to radically simplify your life, withdraw temporarily into solitude, and devote yourself full-time to this practice for extended periods. It is not easy to achieve the bliss of shamatha without leaving heavily populated areas, which tend to be noisy and congested. In contrast, in the wilderness, removed from society, a meditator can more easily set his mind at ease and accomplish meditative stabilization. So here again, the key to success, of course, is continuity, and we're going to be talking about that in a number of ways in the coming days. And as he's mentioned here, continuity of practice, part of that is from time to time, it's very helpful to come to such an event as this, a meditation retreat, where you withdraw from your normal active daily life, spending some time devoting to this practice, and that can really give a big boost to the practice. But of course, also continuity of practice means to have a regular daily practice, but also continuity of practice means not just to have a regular daily practice, but continue to work on mindfulness throughout the day. So we're going to speak about that as well a little bit later. So that's all I really wanted to mention now for the practice. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go back into the practice, focusing at the nostrils. We'll do 2 20-more-minute sessions with a little 2-minute break in the middle. Okay? So finding a nice, comfortable posture. So, of course, we begin by preparing the body, setting it into a state of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. Allowing the breathing to flow naturally and effortlessly. and setting the mind in a state of ease and relaxation. Letting go of any thoughts of the past or the future. In particular, letting go of any expectations for this meditation. And simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment. Through focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. And now narrow the focus and focus on the sensations of the breath at the entrance of the nostrils. Maintaining that ongoing flow of mindfulness throughout the entire cycle of each in and out breath. To help balance the mind, To help overcome agitation or distraction, we can use each out-breath as an opportunity to relax, to release any distractions, and very gently return to the breath. So relax, release, and return. And to help overcome dullness or just being spaced out, we can use each in-breath as an opportunity to refresh our interest in the practice, to restore the attention on the breath, and then to retain that ongoing flow of mindfulness. So refresh, restore, and retain. to stretch your legs. You can do that now quietly. So once again, finding that nice, comfortable posture. And keeping the back nice and straight. And allowing the entire body to become completely relaxed, completely at ease. Keeping the body as still as possible, avoiding any unnecessary moving or fidgeting. Allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. preparing the mind, setting it in a state of ease and relaxation. Not dwelling in the past, not anticipating the future. Simply allowing the mind to rest in the present moment. Through focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Now narrow the focus and focus on the sensations of the breath at the entrance of the nostrils. Using the rope of mindfulness to tie the mind to the sensations of the breath at the entrance of the nostrils. And using the hook of introspection to monitor that, to notice if you're falling into dullness and distraction, and then correcting accordingly. And also using introspection to periodically monitor the body. Is the posture still good? Is there any tightness developing, particularly in the area of the face? And is the breathing flowing naturally? Just one point before we break for lunch. As we mentioned just before this meditation, this idea of continuity, that the key to success in this practice is continuity. And that not only refers to having a daily meditation practice, but also to continue to cultivate mindfulness throughout the day. Because if we put a lot of effort into this practice each morning, but then the rest of the day we're mindlessly running around as we normally do, then we're not going to make much progress. So here also in this retreat, it would be very helpful to continue to cultivate mindfulness between the sessions. And of course here we've got a wonderful opportunity, this beautiful environment around us, nature. So when you're outside in particular, is really just be present with the nature, with the visual aspect, with the sounds of the birds, with the warmth of the sun on the face. So just be really present with those sensory experiences and not allow the conceptual mind to get caught up in all sorts of other things. And also similarly, when we're eating meals here as well, just really be present with eating the meals and enjoy the taste of the food and let the conceptual mind be as quiet as possible. And so then we can also, that can help support us in the practice. So really enjoy the sensory pleasures outside here without the conceptual mind getting caught up in a lot of thinking. Just really be present and then allow the mindfulness to really be present. Okay? So let's break there for lunch and come back at 2 o'clock.